Hey Wargamers, welcome back to the channel, Death From Above Wargaming. I am Aaron and I'm here with Tom and Dom on another wonderful Sunday in the fall with an episode of Jump Point. This is season 2, episode 3, and we're going to be talking about the 80s board game mindset of Battletech. So we've got some great discussion lined up for you guys today, but actually we're going to kick it off with a little patron Q&A, guys. So this one comes in from Trajan, and he asks, I'm on a terrain building bender at the moment, and I'm pondering whether other natural structures can be used as forests instead of trees. So, you know, he's thinking like crystals from the tourmaline wastes in MechWarrior, things along those lines. So my short answer is yes. Now, there are lots of exciting things that I think you could use. Actually, recently over the summer, Dan and I did a battle report on a lava map, and one of the things that that I featured was were these guys, which you can 3D print them. Gale Force 9 sells them. Battlefield in a Box. I don't know if they still sell them or if they're just leftovers on eBay. I don't know if they're, but in any case, you can get these like crystal structures. You can put those out. Another thing that one of our patrons did was, so these are Tom's favorite pieces of terrain known to man. These are from Terrainify, and you can order the STL files for them at a very, very reasonable price. And if you have your own 3D printer, you can shrink them down and have like a series of little rocky outcroppings and things. So my short answer to that is yes. Tom and Dom, what do you guys think?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, any alternate forest is very cool. I do think that we'll have to put, like, a PSA at the end of the video about, like the gambling addiction ones, you know? Like, if you have a problem with terrain, please help. You know, if you haven't seen your wife and children in, you know, a week because you're in your basement flocking a base or whatever. But no, totally. Like, dude, imagine like, a crystal forest. Yeah, like a crit. Yeah, you're like, yeah, I think that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, very, very cool.
And
stuff.
I mean, there's still, yeah, and you, is the question more about like having them follow the terrain rules? Like you know, this is a forest and you can't move through it. Yeah, it's great. Whatever.
It's awesome. Well, it's quite easy to do though, right? Like you just get three of them and you create a zone where you say, okay, anything in there, you've got terrain cover or however you want to put it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, why don't we get into our Ready Room roundtable? So this is going to be a good one. We're going to talk again about the 80s board game mindset. So my first question is really around classic being a beer and pretzels game, right? So this is the quote unquote, this was a beer and pretzels board game. But is that really still a thing that people do when it comes to Battletech? Or, you know, do Wargamers really want, and are they spoiled by that Warhammer style of, you know, 3D terrain that, you know, we see in Alpha Strike and of course how we do Classic with the miniatures rules and things along those lines. What do you guys think? I mean, is the paper mats and the board game mentality still applicable in the, you know, in the 2020s here? So Tom, why don't we start with you?
So I still drink beers occasionally when we play. So I think it's compatible with nicer terrain. I have no interest in paper mats. I don't even play board games that don't have more intricate terrain. So I just think you have to move into the future. The whole reason, I have to imagine that the paper mats were really a relic of the current technology. Like it was probably expensive to make, but now with 3D printers, it's just like, why not? You know, they're already selling these gigantic box sets that could fit terrain inside of them. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I think we need to move past paper mats.
I think Tom's
minis are so far beyond it now. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Tom's point there is the absolute central one that, in 1985, there was no such thing as 3D printing. There weren't companies like Games Workshop, who you get phenomenal terrain from Games Workshop. It's absolutely stunning. So I know it's expensive, but the options are still there. I think as well, because the board game market is now so saturated. So, you know, I mean, I play a few board games that are like, you know, ridiculous. Like modern games, yeah, where you've got like a, you know, you do get a board or a mat or whatever, and that's fine because it's self-contained, but Battletech is inherently now not really that. It is a, what I term a tabletop game where you should be using terrain, you should be using, you know, like the more interesting parts of the hobby, because it's really fun to do that. And I'm not saying you, you know, I don't want to come off like some kind of jackbooted, you know, lunatic here.
We're going
to
burn all your
play with terrain. Yeah, yeah. But like, try it, because once you do it, you'll never go back to paper mats.
Yeah. So I want to key on one point before we move to the next question here. And that was, Tom, you cited the miniature quality, and that the quality of the miniatures is entirely, in my opinion, incongruent with paper mats. We've come so far. We have these beautiful, beautiful, they're not paper stands anymore. They're not little cardboard chits with, you know, a mech printed on them, right? They're really nice. And so, to me, it only makes sense from, you know, just creating a battle and sort of reimagining how these things play out. Like having that 3D terrain, I think, is really, really important.
I do want to say the only place I think there can always be like a starter box, like place for paper and for cardboard mechs. Like that still really does make it accessible. Like I know people, you know, who the only entrance into the game they have is through those cardboard and paper mats, because otherwise they couldn't even afford, you know, some of the boxes. So I understand that, and it's not.
That's a great point.
And so the accessibility part, you know, but I mean, but it can, they can exist together, and the majority of more senior players can move into the current, because we're talking about the long term players who have, you know, walls full of miniatures, and they're still playing on paper mats, right?
Who are you talking about? It's crazy. So let's talk about the rules of the game, which we have talked about many times before. But, you know, we recently, over the summer, I actually just brought this up with the terrain question. We recently played a series of classic battle reports, and we played it fairly close to raw. You know, there were a couple small things we didn't do, a couple of extra things we added in. But a majority of the comments were like, you dummy, you got to play with house rules. You can't play it, you know, out of the box raw. Like, no kidding, it's going to be, you know, slow and grueling. And so the question really is that okay that the game is almost designed in a way that you need to play house rules to speed it up, or you need to bolt on optional rules to speed it up? You know, should everybody have their own way of playing classic? And what does that do to the sort of community cohesion? You know, for example, you walk into a gaming store and there's guys playing Battletech. What optional rules are they using, right? What's the standard tournament format, if there is such a thing? So let's talk about that. Dom, let's start with you. What's your opinions on this?
I think if you are doing it, obviously, like contained within your friend group or your tabletop group or whatever, then you naturally do things like that anyway, and that will be the same for any game. So you might all agree that you don't like a specific rule, so you drop that, and that's just natural, I think, because usually in tabletop games they're quite complex. When you're talking about the overall gaming experience, though, it's, I think, quite damaging when that is the, for want of a better term, like the standard. And it is standard as well. I mean, can you imagine playing classic with like rules as written, with things like the auto cannons and the machine guns, which are just completely useless to, not all of the auto cannons, but like, you know, machine guns are just brutal, don't really do anything. They really, you know, things like that really slow the game down. So why wouldn't you do like the D6 damage? Now, but again, as you quite rightly said, Aaron, you go to a tournament, or you're going, you know, like you're trying to cross pollinate and you're going to a store and you've got multiple people playing, if you teach them the wrong rules, then they're going to go away and pollinate that. It's then a source of confusion. I think it causes not so much disruption, because the internet fixes a lot of this. You can go on, you know, and see, like, go on forums and see how people do it. But I just think it's a bad optic, if you want me to give an official slant to it. It just doesn't look very professional. And I think they really need to start thinking about this if they do, again, like the title of this episode says, like moving away from that kind of more antiquated mindset where you just kind of leave it up to the community. But that's just my personal hot take. So there you go.
All right. Tom, what do you think?
To be honest, it's actually weighed on me a lot. You've struck a nerve with this question, Aaron. You know, I actually have shied away from even trying to join. Like, Seventh Dimension locally has a game, and I'm so worried that we don't play the same way other people do, or they'll be playing a different, and then I don't know the rules. And so it's a turnoff for me to build community. So I think, like, the idea that the expectation is everybody's kind of putting their own flavor on it, you know, maybe it's not a big deal. You know, again, if you're all working from the core rules and then there's just a couple tweaks, it could be not that big of a deal.
Let's talk about Classic complexity for a moment, right? So the complexity of Classic, the ability to pick and choose which weapons you're shooting and the different range brackets and, you know, how much heat does it build up and what heat level am I at from 0 to 30 and the N number of effects that might have, the different locations, the very, you know, dense critical tables, right? All of these things make Classic completely different from every other war game out there, period. But it can also be a challenge for new players. I mean, they look at an 8.5 by 11 record sheet and they're like, what is happening in front of me right now? So, you know, again, is the complexity. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just saying, but don't forget, you also need another reference sheet of all of, like, the effects and the penalties and bonuses.
Right.
And, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
But is that, you know, is that complexity a good thing? Right, because it does differentiate it from every other game out there. Because let's face it, War Machine feels like Infinity, feels like 40K. I mean, they all sort of feel the same. BattleTech feels completely different. So let's focus specifically on Classic. Is the complexity good or bad? What do you think?
Shall I go first as the resident Classic player?
Yes.
Yeah.
Resident gentleman.
There you go. I love the Classic format, and I love that about it. I love the micromanagement of it. But when I think about how I play or introduce people to it, it does dawn on me all the time that, or when I'm playing a game, that I'm constantly looking for workarounds and speed ups. That is inherently a problem, I think. And then, I mean, I've done this before where I've, you know, you'll just get it in a discussion afterwards and I say, that's not actually the rule. This is the real rule. And they say, why on earth would that exist in that? Why would anyone think that? Right. So it is a problem. I acknowledge that. But I love the, it's like you've absolutely hit the nail on the head there, Aaron, in terms of its uniqueness. Like being able to measure that heat scale and to see, you know, I'm shooting with this PPC at this target and it does this level of heat. Like, I really like that element to it. And that's why I really don't veer towards Alpha Strike, because it's far too like vanilla in some respects. And I don't feel like I'm getting the immersion that you get in Classic. But I acknowledge there is a problem, but I personally love it. And that might be to do with my age and the fact that I've been playing Classic for a long time. So I acknowledge that. And I think we across the community need to acknowledge that as well. And have a look, you know, when you're playing with young people, when you're playing with like 20 somethings, see how they respond to the really slow rule sets. Probably won't be very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to remember how old you are, Dom.
You're so old.
A geriatric.
I am so old.
So
I don't think that's really true, but
It does. I totally feel you on that, though. You feel like so old when you go to these game stores now. It's funny. Like, again, going back to the override, adding in location damage is just like, oh, feels so good, you know?
Yeah.
Big fan. So I feel you. Like, some of the stuff is really valuable in it. The minutiae of locations and effects can be really fun. And if you have the time, there's something to be said for it. I think some of the mechanics feel outdated. And again, I've made the same statement that it'd be better off in a video game for some of it, because it's just hard to keep track of the cumulative effects that you're facing.
Yeah.
Use a digital record sheet can help that, so on and so forth. But it's really like the movement style, just like it. I like the record sheet aspect, but I don't like the translation to the tabletop as much as I do like the override movement and the range brackets on weapons. Also, I don't know if you get really into building mechs and then you're like, you know, figuring all this stuff out and you like that, you know, the expense that you spend on this one weapon gets you that sort of slightly longer range than a slightly, you know, cheaper weapon. I can understand how you can really geek out on that stuff, but for me, it's not why I play.
Right.
And so yeah, there's a time and place for it in the retirement home of where Dom lives.
Yeah. that's a very interesting point, right? So just kind of going back to the question, is the complexity worth it or not? Like for some people, I think that's true. You know, they are really min-maxing down to the inch, right? But what does that really add for the 80%? I'm not sure very much, right? But let's move on to the last question here in our roundtable. And it's really about the rule cycle. So Games Workshop, right? They have this vicious cycle of Codex, 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 New Edition, Codex, Codex, right? And it's just money, money. It's like $50, $50, $50, $50, $100, $50. People are terrified of this cycle, especially in the BattleTech community. But largely the BattleTech rules, with the exception of Alpha Strike being introduced in the early 2000s, I think when was that, 2002 maybe, I'm not sure. The rules largely have not changed. Like if I pull out my third edition rule book off the shelf and try to play, like it's not very different from, I know vehicles got an overhaul, but largely the foundations of the system have not really changed. Whereas even in the last 5 years of 40K, there were significant changes to, right? Armor went away and was replaced with toughness and vehicles and, you know, like significant changes.
Even the way you build forces, right? Totally different, right?
Right. Like, like there was a lot of constant rebalancing, right? So a lot of things have changed, right? And so, is it okay that is it a good thing that BattleTech really has stuck to their guns and, you know, really hasn't completely overhauled their system? Or is it a bad thing? I think this is like a Ford Chevy debate, but, you know, very, very interested to hear your guys' thoughts. Tom, why don't we start with you this time? What do you think?
I think it's a good thing. I think the correct approach and the way that they've sort of handled it is establishing separate rules, right? If you want to innovate on something, you don't have to rebuild the thing that works. You can make Alpha Strike, right? Instead of replacing something. I like that consistency. And I think that's my position.
I think Randall Bills would agree with you. And I think, you know, we've said it before. We've cited the quote, like, still selling, why change it, right? But Dom, what do you think?
Go ahead, Tom. Sorry.
I was going to say the one thing just about the product cycle that you mentioned, Catalyst really has ramped up the release cycle. It seems, right? There's books coming out, the new box sets, and they're basically responding to the marketplace. Like people have been sucking up everything that they put out. I don't want to see the rules become part of that. Like, it's nice to have plastics, and it's nice to have expansions and filling in the gaps to translate the lore to tabletop, right? Ill Clan, all these things. They're really taking the IP they have and just translating it, which I think is the right move.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dom.
That's fine. I will take the contrarian view on this then, but I'll put some caveats on it in terms of what I do feel about this. I do think it's a bad thing that they don't update the game. I think it's all about the situation, right? So let me just, very quick example. I was really into Kill Team, which is the 40K skirmish game, several years ago. Loved the first version of that. Within 3 years, which is on the Games Workshop carousel, they brought out version 2, I didn't like it at all. It really bored me. It was far too simplistic. And I don't play Kill Team anymore because of it, because all the community and the people that I played with have moved on to version 2. And me being very, very old, as we've already acknowledged, just decided that wasn't for me. So exactly. So I went back to the gardening and the, so, but serious point, that was pretty traumatic. And I was quite upset when it happened because I felt like the entire game, which I really did love the first version of Kill Team, and I had a lot of it, and I really kind of got me back into the hobby a few years ago properly. Battletech, though, is something where you don't have to do new carousel rules every 3 years. But we are now 30 years plus, and they still haven't formally fixed machine guns. And I'm sorry to keep going on about that. It might be to do with the Alzheimer's, but the machine guns really do stick in my craw because I'm just like, can we just fix it? Because they don't work in Classic. Like, just a once-in-a-generation rule set. That's all I'm asking. Give me a... fix the things that were bad in 1986. That's it. That's all I ask.
I'm sort of in Camp Dom, and, like, I don't want, new codexes every 3 weeks to, rebalance the mistakes of the past, but... even if they kept the old rule set in place, something that is updated to say, like, all right, this is our, this is our arcade rule set or whatever, and we're changing stuff, like machine guns, autocannons, like they're going to behave a different way. Like, or, we always talked about like the old Solaris rule set where turns, like a traditional 10-second Battletech turn is chunked up into faster turns, and like maybe you can shoot weapons every, who knows, rate of fire, like introduce new mechanics, like break some of the paradigms, like make the game modern and exciting. I don't know. I'm in that camp. I would love to see a refreshed way to play this exciting game, in the modern era with the technology and sort of the methodologies that have been proven over time. Gaming has come a long way in 35, 40, 50 years, right? So it would be cool to see some of that updated. But let's move on to our rapid fire segment, shall we? Now, remember, I will remind you guys for the sake of the audience that this is, in fact, rapid fire. So no digressing on points here. You have to pick your answer and lock it in. First question, Tom, we'll start with you, and Dom, we'll go to you. First question, favorite 80s board game?
Home Alone. Wait, no, that's the 90s. 80s board game.
I'll accept it. I'll accept 80s or 90s. Early 90s is basically the 80s. Okay. Yeah. Home Alone. I didn't even know they had a board game.
I didn't either. I've got to get that now.
Missing out.
Dom, what about you?
Space Crusade.
Ooh. Oh. I don't know. I was going to say Hero Quest, but now I'm wondering. I think maybe, was that the 90s too? I don't know. Or was that late 80s?
No, they're both 80s. I think they're both
Yeah, Hero Quest for sure. Fantastic. They just recently, Avalon Hill reprinted it. Brand new. You can buy it.
It's beautiful.
Awesome stuff.
We might have played the reprint, actually, Aaron.
No, we played the original.
Yeah, 1989 and re-released in 2021. There you go.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Okay. Next
favorite modern board game.
Oh, what do we play the most? I have to give two. Stuffed Fables, which Aaron, you turned me on to. Family loves it. And then Ticket to Ride, which is actually probably a very old game, but we freaking love it.
I like it. I like Ticket to Ride. Yeah. Dom, what about you?
Pandemic. Fantastic game. Mechanics are gorgeous in that game.
Yeah.
I didn't like that game.
Oh, really? I love Pandemic. You can play it like Solitaire.
Oh, my God. All right, last question. What is your gaming snack of choice? Not drink, but snack. Tom, what is your gaming snack of choice?
Ooh. Man, these are great questions. Oh, man, that's so hard. Beef jerky, I think.
Okay.
I try not to eat carbs when I'm playing.
It's a fair point.
Yeah. Okay.
Dom, what about you?
Well, unlike Tom, I love a carb. So I will say crisps, but the American audience won't understand that. So chips.
Potato chips.
Yes, chips. Chips.
Okay. Yeah. Crisps. Yeah.
Actually,
in Britain.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll amend. Dom, do you guys have pretzel? Yeah, do you guys have pretzel chips in the UK?
We do. Yeah, they're not massive. Like, they're not super popular or anything, but we do have them. Dude, yeah,
they have a buffalo wing flavor that is incredibly good.
So I'll have good. To try and find that. We do have an American store in town. So
yeah, dude, check it out. Yeah. I thought those were all drug scams. Aren't they all money laundering scams?
I don't think the one in Nottingham is. That's
This is exactly what rapid fire is not supposed to be, Tom. anyway, why don't we're done with rapid fire. Buffalo pretzel chips is your final answer for snack. We're going to move on to a brand new segment called Trivia Tech. I have trolled the depths of the internet to find a random BattleTech factoid. And I'm going to ask you about it and give you multiple choice to determine what you think it is. All right. So what is the blue corona in BattleTech? Is it A, another name for PPC discharge? Is it B, a planet in the deep periphery? Is it C, the name of a dropship? Or D, a drink that is popular in Lyran Commonwealth space?
Tiki bars, yeah. I'm going to go with A.
Okay, another name for PPC discharge. Dom, what is your choice?
I'm going to go with A. I would go with A as well, because I have no idea.
All right. Well, you are both wrong. It is, in fact, the name of a dropship.
I know it. Really? It's always the C. Blue, I know that.
The blue corona. You can go on Sarna and look it up. So Sarna has this great function where you can have it just like go to a random page. And so nice. I was like clicking around on random pages. I'm like, I'm gonna do some trivia tech. So fun fact there.
I'm so excited about this. Yeah.
Now next thing here is Render Blender, Tom, your favorite.
Wait, only one question?
That's it. Only one. Only one.
Okay.
You want more next time? Maybe I'll do a whole panel next time. We'll see.
We should do a Quizzo edition of Jump Point. It'd be so fun.
Do all trivia. All right. So Render Blender, we're doing IS Battle Armor. You may have seen it flash up. Tom, there it is. Are you ready to dive in? Now, I got to tell you, I'm very, very excited about this model because I like Battle Armor. I like Elementals, but Innersphere Infantry cannot hold a candle to them and just gets massacred. So having something that we can use on the IS side, very, very exciting. So I'm going to bring this guy up full screen, Tom. Are you ready? Are you ready to blend it? We have four pictures, by the way, of this. Okay. So here's picture one. Do you want me to scroll through all the options and then you can start blending?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I like his Dalzim arms from, Street Fighter. They're very long, which I like. Like Dalzim. Extended reach. Dalzim. Yeah. Okay, go on. The backpack is so good. Very cool. You know, the only criticism I have of this current gen of BattleTech design is those blocky antennas just remind me so much of Tau. Like, I can't... It, every time I see them, it bothers me.
They look very Tau-esque. Yes.
Yeah, it's just, and it's impossible. Tau is so iconic, and they stole that entire aesthetic. Like, it's tough. But, dude, those backpacks are so good. These miniatures look so cool. I'm really excited about this. It almost reminds me of, like, an old school 80s, like, side scrolling video game. Like, I can imagine these guys being, like, 16-bit. Yeah. Running around shooting at me with those giant cannons and like Contra or something.
Oh my God, yeah. So Contra. Good, yeah.
They do look like guys.
Yeah, they're awesome. This is really cool. I love giant oversized guns. And yeah, I have nothing bad to say about them except for the Tau thing, which isn't their fault. I can't blame them.
Can't blame the battle suit.
And also, like, old school skinny antennas are so BattleTech. Like, that'd be a cool, like, even you, Aaron, you mod your guys to have like wire antennas, right? Like,
right.
So we can probably just cut them off and put, little antennas.
Extremely tiny. They're going to be so small. I wonder, I wonder if they made them thicker because they are extreme. Like, think about the size of the elementals, right?
Very, very sure that is the case, Aaron. I think that is true.
And I'm just surprised. Yeah, I'm wondering, like, even like the level of detail on like these ridges here on the backpack, if they're even going to come out at that scale. It'll be interesting to see what the final production model looks like. But I do really like the helmets. And I think these are very inner sphere looking as compared to like the elementals, which are a little more alien and like, you know, toad like, if you will. These are definitely sort of, you know, blockier and it is kind of funny. They have really long arms and very, very short legs.
Well, the lower leg is long too. They have like shorter upper sections and no torso. So I like the.
Yeah, I like that. It makes them look proper in a sphere, whereas the old elementals that you could get on the Kickstarter, they looked a lot sleeker and a lot more, you know, like there were 7-foot monsters in there, which there are. But the these are just dudes.
Right.
Dudes in armor, right?
I was wondering, like, if the actual person, like, if their hand is, like, really here and their foot is really,
Probably,
what I mean? Like, they're sitting in this region versus, like, filling. That's a great point, Dom, right? Like, the elemental dudes are actually enormous, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of neat. I wonder if Scroggins is watching, maybe he can comment on if that's something that factored into the sort of shorter, you know, thigh and like longer, you know, calf section, if you will, and so on and so forth with the arms.
Be kind of interesting. Man. To give a final rating, I think this is an A+. Well executed.
I really like them.
Love the poses.
I love the poses. I know some people were bummed that there was only like one base and it had just these four guys on it. They wanted like multiple.
Do we know that though? Is that being confirmed? Because
I don't know.
We might get four different.
Maybe.
So this might just be one of them.
Might just be one of them. Who knows for sure? Who knows for sure?
Scroggins, if you're watching,
let us know.
Comment, please.
Let us know. So this is the Inner Sphere Battle Armor. Very, very cool. I think I have a bunch of them coming. So, you know, paint them in various generic Inner Sphere colors, you know, reds and grays and greens and tans and, you know, work them in as much as we can. Maybe we can do a whole battle report of just battle armor. It's battle armor. And it'll be 4 hours of us just moving 1 inch across the table until we finally get into range.
We can call it first wave. It'll be like them just running at each other across the battlefield.
It's like that scene from Monty Python where the Black Knight
strike.
Yeah. Just keeps running. Yeah.
So good. So good. All right. Well, that's all I got. So this wraps up episode 3 of our second season of Jump Point. Leave it in the comments. Let us know what you think about the 80s board game mindset. Always love hearing everybody's opinions. And also let us know what you think about this new Inner Sphere Battle Armor. Very, very cool. That said, couple
more
closing thoughts.
Hearing what,
go ahead.
I want to hear what snacks they like. That's more what I want to hear.
Leave us your favorite snack in the comments. I like that, Tom. That's a good one. And while you're doing that, you can also head on over to Ares Games and Minis and check that out for all of your battle tech needs, the dice, the books, the minis, the decals, terrain, everything that you need is over there at Ares Games and Minis. And of course, don't forget to subscribe, leave a like, and as we asked, leave a comment on a variety of topics, including your favorite snack. And if you want to come out to Patreon, you can help out the channel over there. It's as little as $1 a month, gets you in on the action and helps us to continue producing great content for you on your favorite game of all time. That said, guys, thank you so much for watching. Have a great Sunday. And of course, stay tuned. Always great stuff coming from Death from Above Wargaming.